A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 241. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Codename Icarus. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Codename Icarus was a 5-part serial with 30-minute episodes that first aired on the BBC in 1981. And it had a very nice, interesting sort of mix of science and spies with espionage and strange sort of mind control or brainwashing type techniques being used on teenage prodigies, in particular our protagonist.
Yes, this teenager, Martin, who is the maths and physics wizard, who is at this special school where they try to nurture very talented teenagers, of which he's one. But of course, there's a strange, as you say, some strange and sinister going-ons associated with that. He's at this, what seems to be a tremendous opportunity for him. But as we've said in the last episode, Falconley School is perhaps not all it seems. And the benevolent head teacher is certainly more and more interested in the implications of Martin's work in physics, as the students are all treated as with this strange mixture of deference and then mind control techniques that you've hinted at, Brian, to actually get them to produce the work that the school seems so interested in.
Yes, absolutely. And what we learn as we go on is that the work that the students are doing, the problems that they're solving, are contributing to a larger project. And yes, they're being given these challenging problems to work on and interesting things for them to do, but those individual pieces are all working towards some greater whole. And Martin's work, as he's looking on it, and he understands the subatomic physics that he is working with, and he realizes that the things he's working on may be leading to something called a quark bomb, a devastating new kind of nuclear weapon.
Yes, hopefully entirely fictional, I believe, Brian, but yes, quite devastating in its implications in this show. Didn't quite how it all ties together with missiles being shot down and strange happenings with the birds around Falconley School. But yes, this is the implication of it all, this quark bomb that they're so interested in.
Yes, and of course, we're wondering about Project Icarus and who is behind it and all of these things and what this larger project is. And maybe it includes things other than the quark bomb, because we have missiles being shot down and all of this. So it is this, you know, quite complicated and rich set of ideas for what the mysterious Icarus Foundation is doing.
Yes, and we have the initially benevolent character of the school's headmaster, John Dole, but as time progresses, it becomes apparent that he's more and more interested in this quark bomb and Martin's work on subatomic physics. And it seemed to me, perhaps, Brian, that there's an implication that he might be overstepping his sort of remit from the Icarus Foundation, that maybe some of this is his own interests and initiative. There may be more murky goings-on than are perhaps are revealed in the programme.
Absolutely. And of course, in fiction, whenever we see something called Icarus, we know some of the ideas being referenced.
Yes, that's right. We sort of reminded of Greek mythology of this, you know, the bright spark who flies so high but then gets his wings burnt. There is certainly some of that going on with our teenage whiz Martin here.
Yes, and the Icarus Foundation, as we learn what's going on, they certainly are playing with fire.
And of course, that comes to the attention of the spooks of British intelligence. As we've said, this is a show that has naval intelligence behind it. We've got the one agent who's been assigned to find out what's going on, and he is drawn to Falconry School. But he's also got his sort of spy master, a sort of sleek, well-oiled, upper echelon chappie from the naval intelligence. And he's also got a more sort of rough and ready resource, a chap who seems to know a great deal about everything that he goes to from time to time to find out more about Falconry and what's going on at the school.
Yes, that's right.
So while we're talking about Codename Icarus, we start obviously to compare it to other shows and themes that we've picked up on from British television science fiction over the years. And this is a show about computers. It's a show about controlling minds. It's that fertile subject for science fiction from the 1960s onwards, or perhaps even earlier, but certainly which shows that we've looked at, such as Undermined, The Champions, Prisoner, all those shows from the 60s that had some of these mind control elements in them that here play out in a seemingly everyday British school in this early 1980s show.
Yes, absolutely. And the idea of these mind control ideas, and I'll say brainwashing, is something that is very rich in fiction that I think became popular and something that was used a lot starting with the 1962 movie The Manchurian Candidate, which dealt with that in a very intense way. And part of what they were looking back on historically goes back even further to the Korean War, where the idea of psychological manipulation was something that was actually happening. And that, I believe, is when the term brainwashing and these ideas of manipulating people's minds, when they sort of first came to prominence from things that were actually happening.
Yeah, so it's interesting to think back to where this all comes from. But as you say, here it is in 1981 on the BBC, a school that is brainwashing children.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it very much ties to Cold War ideas of the espionage things and the brainwashing things, you know, were very prominent sort of ideas relating to the Cold War and ideas that were very common in fiction because of that. And also these ideas of missile defense and super weapons and these types of things are also very prominent in Cold War-influenced fiction. And we've seen it in things like City Beneath the Sea from the early 60s, and closer to this time period in The Jensen Code and The Doombolt Chase. So they are things that are that have a strong current through fiction of that time. And there are a lot of rich ideas that brought us some very interesting things.
Yes, it's all, in a way, it's quite disturbing because, as you say, one of the sort of key paranoias of the Cold War was always the subject of weapons. Who was developing which weapons? Who was developing something that could interfere with weapons? I suppose the general unease about super weapons being out there and the devastation they could cause. Something that turns up here in Codename Icarus with the fictional quark bomb that they seem to be so keen to develop.
That's absolutely right. And not only do you have the super weapons part of it, you have the espionage side, which was another big sort of fear and concern in the Cold War. And then you have these brainwashing ideas. So it's very much of its time, but I think deals with those types of ideas in some interesting ways. So those types of things I think are always interesting to see in these types of shows. And of course, what we see at Falconlee with the brainwashing of these teenage students and their minds sort of being used as weapons in a way is actually quite disturbing. And it's, you know, it's quite interesting to see it being used in this way.
Yes, it is actually. I mean, basically, it's a show about brainwashing bright teenagers to help produce super weapons. And poor old Martin Smith, the central character, I mean, he goes from being a sort of quite bright, independent young chap, and he becomes, in a way, quite psychologically scarred by what happens to him. Fortunately, towards the end of the show, he does seem to recover and improve from this. But it's quite nasty stuff. You know, and of course, one of the problems that he experiences at Falconlee and that his family experience is that they don't seem to have any contact with their students once they're there. So, he's cut off from his family, who becomes so concerned that they actually send his older brother off to Falconlee to try and find out what's going on, which leads to another sort of thread in the plot and in the efforts to get Martin free from the influence of Falconlee.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can see from what we're looking at here that there are some interesting things going on in this one. So I think we should go more properly into our own feelings about this, even more than we have already, with the good and the bad, if you will. So, Eamon, what did you like about Codename Icarus?
Well, I think we have to give it credit for bringing in these big ideas to a children's spy-fi show on the Beeb in the early 80s. As we've already said, it does reflect, I think, a lot of the fears and paranoia of the times. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting stuff, you know, missile defense, super weapons, brainwashing. We certainly can't fault it for its sort of grasp of big subjects, Brian.
Yes, I think that's right. It does go for the big ideas, and I think it deals with them quite successfully. I think what it does is interesting and well done. It isn't just something where you have the ideas there, but it fails to do anything with them. It gets into those ideas, and I think works with them quite well. So that was neat to see, and it's the type of show that, thinking about it and talking about it afterwards, gets me liking it more, because it did such interesting things with those ideas that it leaves you with something to think about, which is something I really like.
Yes, there certainly is, I think, you know, plenty to inspire sort of thought and, you know, discussion about this show for some of these very big issues that it wrestles with. So I suppose that takes us to the writing by Richard Cooper. You know, I guess I'd say an ambitious project for him and reasonably well delivered, I'd have thought.
I think it's quite well written, actually. I think what he was doing with it, I think he did quite well. It had a number of pieces to balance, and one of the things that, and I think this comes down to the writing quite a bit, is that with very few characters and sort of few, you know, not all that many scenes, they had to create a whole espionage plot without being able to, you know, have huge sets and all kinds of things going on, you know, just a few characters and some, you know, very quick scenes bringing in lots of things happening. Just with those few characters, they quite effectively created this whole espionage world around this. And while the cast did it very well, I think the writing really made that a strong part of it. And I think that was fairly impressive that worked so well.
Okay, so that part is well done. We've got the performances and look and feel of the show. What would you like to start with there, Brian?
Well, I think the look and feel of it is quite strong. You know, the school, you know, and a lot of this was location work, but the school looked quite convincing for the type of thing that they were doing. And, you know, when they went to the game and the stuff being done on a squash court and all of this, they made it work quite effectively, I thought. So the use of the locations they had were quite good. The things with the espionage type characters and the base they were walking around on and that sort of thing. I think without too many resources, they were able to use what they had very well. So I thought the look and the feel of it was pretty strong.
Okay. I mean, certainly the outside of the school and the grounds looks great, looks just the part. And of course, now it is an actual school. So, you know, as we've said before, life has imitated art here. I must admit, though, Brian, I was a bit puzzled by the squash court. And I suspect it was some of the limitations of the budget in that they didn't have a great many locations to film in. And one of them was obviously the squash court, where these strange interrogations or mind control episodes that form the game take place. And of course, it's where the dramatic conclusion of the show takes place as well, where Martin finally confronts the person behind Project Icarus or the Icarus Foundation. And I must admit, I was a little bit disappointed that it was taking place in this rather bland squash court.
Yeah, I see what you mean there, for sure. What I liked about the use of that squash court is it was a space that is very identifiable for what it is, being used for a very different purpose. So you expect a squash court to be used for playing squash. And in fact, they're using a squash court with a very small desk in the middle of it, so you have the characters sitting very close together in this much bigger open space, and the sort of very strange use of that space.
Okay. I mean, it may be, as you say, it's part of the disorientation for the students that is part of this process of the game. So maybe it fits in there. It's slightly unusual, but there you go. The performances of our leads, our teenagers and our adults?
Well, there is a bit of a mixed bag here, because while the adult characters and the adult performers, I think were quite strong. I think they had a good cast here. As with many of these types of shows, quite a bit rests on these young teenage performers. And the teenage actors were okay. I thought the main character, the actor wasn't great. He was okay. I think that was probably the weakest part of this. And I found him kind of annoying at the beginning. But as the story progressed and there was so much happening, and he really was pushing it forward, and you did start to sympathize with him more and more as all these things happened, I got to like him more, and it became something that the weaknesses of his performance didn't matter so much as they did at the beginning. But I would say that his performance was sort of a weak point in this.
Yes, he does start out being rather annoying, I thought, as well. When he gets to, you know, he's at the school and he's suffering from the brainwashing that they're putting him through, I thought he was quite good at doing the sort of, you know, the psychologically damaged parts of his performance. I thought that came across quite well. But unfortunately, when he gets to the big confrontations with John Dole and also the mysterious figure behind the Icarus Foundation, sadly, I thought those weren't quite so good. As you say, he slightly weaker in those areas. But as you say, the adult performance is great. There's lots of familiar faces from British TV. You may spot Gordon Kaye playing the sort of dishevelled, semi-retired spook with all the background knowledge and info that the lead agent has to go to for information whenever he needs it. But yeah, the adult performances, I think, pretty good. John Dole, played by Philip Locke, I think, you know, a pretty good sinister performance from an actor who's well used to doing that sort of thing in film and television. So yeah, not too bad. Pretty good in the adult department.
Yes. And I think for some of the scenes, as things become more intense, the dialogue and the script carry things so well that these young actors, in particular Barry Angel as Martin Smith, are able to bring something to it. And, you know, when we have that intensity, it all, I think, becomes very watchable.
While I was watching it, I was, I think, inevitably drawn to compare it with the ITV children's shows from the 1970s that we've spent quite a lot of time considering. In particular, Doombolt and Jensen Code came to my mind. How do you think it stands up against those, Brian?
Well, it's interesting. I think certainly the Doombolt chase had quite a charismatic set of young performers, which I think is a strong point compared to Codename Icarus, or compared to the Jensen Code, for that matter. I think that really helped with that one. This one, I think the fact that it was done in 5 episodes rather than about 7 was to its advantage. There is a lot happening in this. The pace is quite rapid for what it is, I think. And I think in terms of the ideas and how much they got in here and the pacing of it, I think in that way this stands above the others. But in terms of some aspects with the younger characters, the other ones, especially the Doombolt chase, are a bit ahead of this one. So it sort of depends how you're looking at things.
Okay. I mean, as you say, it's certainly a short and pacey show. You know, it's just the 5 episodes. They come in at just under 30 minutes each, and they cover a lot of ground. They have a lot to get through in what would, I think, normally be a 6-episode show. And of course, it was broadcast fairly quickly, 2 nights a week for 2.5 weeks in late 1981. So it's short and punchy and pacey, I guess, is how we'd put it, Brian, or I would.
Yeah, it is. And the fact that they have so many different big ideas and sort of manage to do something with those, I think is a really nice aspect to this. The fact that they were able to deal with the sort of super weapon, nuclear arms type things, and the missile defense, missiles shooting down other missiles aspects, and the brainwashing things, and, dealing with espionage and these ideas of bright children being used to the advantage of these organizations. That's a lot to deal with, and I think that was really nice how they were able to do that.
Okay, so they do deal with an awful lot of stuff. They cover quite a lot of ground in this fairly short show from 1981. Anything more you want to say about it before we get to our recommendations, Brian?
I think we should go to the recommendations.
Okay, why don't you go first?
Okay, well, I will say this is quite a neat show. I quite enjoyed it. I don't think it's one of the great classics of British sci-fi from its era. It's certainly not a perfect show. It has its issues. But it's quite good, and it's worth a watch. And for selling at $12 for the DVD, I'm going to give this not a strong all-out recommendation, but I think I'm going to recommend this because it's a neat one to look at and, to think about afterwards. And certainly if you're in North America, but maybe even if you're importing it to the UK, this is one that's not bad, and it's not too expensive. So, yeah, I think this gets a recommendation.
Okay. Over here in the UK, I have to say, as I've probably hinted as we've gone along, that I had more problems with Codename Icarus than I think you did, Brian. I found it a very slight show. It is quick and to the point, and fortunately is over and done with fairly quickly from my point of view. And of course, it's slightly more difficult to get hold of here in Region 2, so I'm not entirely sure that it's worth the £20 that I probably paid for it. Although if you can get it cheaper on import, it might be worth a look. Personally, I would go to Doombolt Chase or Jensen Code before I got to Codename Icarus. It's, for me, it was a case of British invaders watching the show so you don't have to some of the time. So not really a recommendation from me here in the UK. But of course, if you think I'm wrong, if you'd like to defend Codename Icarus, please do get in touch with us.
Okay, fair enough. I think this is another case of it being an interesting piece to look at in context for its time and for the issues it was dealing with.
Yes, that's probably fair enough. It is a show of its age, and, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on then which played into some of the themes of Codename Icarus.
So, in summary, Codename Icarus introduced us to young Martin Smith, who was a 15-year-old mathematical prodigy who goes to this fancy school for young, highly intelligent students who are in some ways treated very well and given all of these opportunities to work on their subject matter of choice, and sets them all of these interesting problems. But of course, we find something sinister at this school as well, that in fact relates to a kind of brainwashing. And over time, we find that these students are being used for their abilities and their intelligence to solve problems that are part of these larger things that involve weapons and large sort of strategic elements in the Cold War. And of course, this brings us into these other threads of dealing with espionage and strange things happening with technology emerging and different unexpected things happening from different areas, with lots of different things coming in involving this strange Icarus Foundation that is behind the Falcon Lee School and behind other things as well. So all of these complications leading to a rather strange and intense conclusion.
Nicely done, Brian. And of course, if you've seen Codename Icarus, if you can recall it, or if you've seen it more recently, do drop by the Facebook group and give us your own thoughts about the programme or about our review of it.
Yes, absolutely.
And please come back and join us next time when, surprise, surprise, we're going back to the 70s to an ITV children's show. But this is a show called Raven, which is, well, it's a slightly unusual one again. Some odd themes to talk about when we return next time, Brian.
Yes, going back into one of the stranger shows of the ITV run of things in the 70s. And we've talked about some others as well, which I'm sure we'll mention next time. So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group. And we always have some interesting things to talk about there, I think, with a variety of things from our listeners, and a nice way to converse about all sorts of things related to British sci-fi and related topics.
Absolutely, yes. Do come and join us there. And as always, there may be the opportunity for a contest to win my DVDs once I've watched them. So do drop by and join us on Facebook, where all the fun is. Or join us at the Voice of Geeks internet radio channel. That's at vognetwork.com. You'll find British Invaders on a Monday and a Tuesday, but you'll also find a host of several other good shows about all sorts of geek-related topics. Pod Culture is there, but there's many others as well. It's an interesting network. Do drop by and say hello.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed for being with us. And until next time, it's Codename Eamon also signing off.